if they're new to Anansi stories, if they're new to Ghanaian culture, I hope it sparked a sense of curiosity and interest that they may want to find more Anansi stories or more African folklore and mythology.
That's Ama Ofosia Lieb, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Ahead, we'll talk about Golden Bourne, love, lies, and legacy all tangled in a trickster's web. It's set in a near-future world where ancient gods and modern life collide. Ama Ofosia Lieb was born in Ghana and spent her formative years across several countries, including Canada, the Bahamas, Puerto Rico, Nigeria, and South Africa, before settling in California. She draws on her multicultural experience and knowledge of folklore to inform her writing. Golden Bourne is her debut novel. Ama, welcome to Conversations.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dan.
Tell us about the inspiration for this novel.
Absolutely. So when my kids were really, really young, I would tell them bedtime stories, and I included the Anansi stories in them that I grew up enjoying, and they loved them. And so they wanted to go to bookstores and find books about Anansi written by authors from Ghana. And at that time, several years ago, we couldn't find any, and they were so disappointed. And I told them not to worry, I was going to write one for them. And they took it as a promise. And so I delivered. So that was the inspiration behind the story. I wanted to write a novel where we had a protagonist who got pulled into Anansi's orbit and adventures ensued.
But you didn't set this in the past, sort of, you know, mythology, tradition sort of thing. You set it a bit in the future. So tell us about the plot here.
Our main character, 17-year-old Akoma Addo, and she investigates supernatural crimes for a secret agency in a near future San Francisco. And I picked a near future San Francisco so that I could play with the geography a bit and put new neighborhoods in there, including one called Africatown, where you would be able to have a vibrant enclave that celebrates the diaspora. And it was just made it a great way to incorporate Ghanaian mythology. So her father is in a mysterious coma, and she encounters Anansi, a West African spider god of stories and trickery, and he offers to save her father. But in exchange, threatens to destroy everything she's ever believed in and the people that she loves.
So tell us a bit more about this mythology that you've woven into this story.
Yes. So as I said, I'm a big fan of Anansi, and he is a character that has this duality of sometimes he's a hero and sometimes he's a villain. And I thought that would be fun to pick one of his most famous mythologies, a folklore story called How Anansi Became the Owner of All Stories, and use that as my main weaving point through the story. And it was a lot of fun. And so then you also have characters like Sakumo, the god of war, and Mamiwata, the god of water. And then we also have Asasia, who is the goddess of earth. And so it was just great to bring all these characters alive and weave it into this adventure for Akoma.
So Akoma is dealing with her father being in a coma, and she needs answers for what's, you know, has happened. And she lives in this near future world of father's technology, but yet this sort of magical, mythological world is still very present. So how do you kind of mix those two?
It was very interesting because for her job as a secret agent, magic has to be a secret. They're protecting it from the wider population. But then she doesn't even know, we find out later, that she has a magical lineage. And that is where the Ghanaian mythology appears. And it's through the POV of her grandmother, which was a very fun thing for me to do in YA, to have a POV with an older character. Because in Ghanaian culture, we have a deep respect for our elders. And so this is a great way for me to have that reflected in the story. And so her case and her family's lineage dovetail. And then that kind of reveals all of the magical aspects to her.
So for her, it's not only just finding out what's, you know, going on with her father, but it's also rediscovering her, well, not even maybe rediscovering, but just discovering her heritage that she didn't even know she had.
Yes. And I thought that was really fun thing for her to be investigating magic and keeping it a secret, and then finding out that, well, there's secrets that have been kept from her as well, from her family, until there's a certain point where she comes of age, and then she's allowed to find out about the magical lineage that she has. So through that, she discovers why her father ended up in this magical coma.
Tell us a bit more about Africa Town, because, you know, you've created this different area of San Francisco. Why was that important? Maybe not just for the story, but for you personally, you know, what did you envision here of a town that maybe you'd like to live in?
Exactly. You've nailed it. It was what I would have loved to have in my own backyard. Walking through an area that is residential and commercial. And I mean, in Africa, there are 54 countries. And so just imagining a neighborhood where that vibrant, diverse diaspora is celebrated. You can go into one area and you experience a little bit of Ethiopia, move into another area and experience a little bit of Kenya, Ghana, Mozambique. And I just thought that'd be so interesting and fun to have access to that. And so with that in mind, I thought, oh, this could be something fun to put in this book, where we have a lead character who lives in an enclave like that, that is very celebratory.
I'm wondering also, because, you know, you've had a very multicultural upbringing, lived in a lot of different countries, but that also kind of reflects, you know, what you experienced in your life. You like to have all that diversity and different cultural influences.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of those things when I look back at my upbringing, it was just a lot of fun to live in different countries, experience different foods, music, culture, clothing. So I definitely was an influence when creating this book in terms of wanting to put that on the page as well.
Well, obviously mythology plays a strong part in this book. I'm curious about sort of the other themes that you wanted to explore in this novel.
The importance of cultural heritage and ceremony and tradition. There is a ceremony in the book, a baby naming ceremony, which is something that is just a deep, rich cultural tradition that we have, where when a child is born, they're not introduced to the world until 8 days later. And then in introducing the child to the world, that's when the child is given the name. And it was just something that is, it's powerful, it's wonderful. And I thought it'd be great to insert in this, in the story, for Akoma to also experience and for the reader to experience. Because I just think world cultures have so many beautiful traditions that we can all experience and learn from. And this was just one of the special ones that I decided to include in the book.
I'm curious also, you know, this is your first novel, and you've incorporated a lot of interesting things here. You have a murder mystery, you have all this mythology, you have this future sort of world. How did that all kind of come together for you as you were writing the book?
I think I made it a blend of all the elements that I enjoy in reading. I love mystery, I love fantasy, I love romance. And so as I was putting it together, I just thought, oh, wouldn't this be fun if I included this in this way? Wouldn't this be interesting? The sci-fi elements, I call it sci-fi light, just to make it more accessible for myself. And, you know, there are other writers who write amazing, more futuristic sci-fi. And I just kind of wanted to go on a lighter path. But it was just a lot of fun for me to write on the page everything that I love to read.
This is being marketed as a young adult novel. But I've talked with a lot of young adult authors, and they say that, yes, it's marketed this way, but they have a lot of older readers as well. So how do you sort of imagine the audience for this book?
I like to say, I guess, age 12 to 100. I mean, I think I'm a huge reader of YA. I love that publishing category a lot. And so for writing for a younger audience, you know, the key thing is to not dumb it down. You just have to, you know, respect their intelligence. And I think in doing so, it broadens your audience. And I think those of us who are older have that nostalgia, you know, to kind of go back and imagine ourselves as a 17-year-old, and would we make the same decisions that this character is making? And so I would like to think that that's part of the broad appeal.
Tell us a little bit more about that character, because she goes through a lot. How do you see her sort of evolving over the course of this novel?
Yes. So she is going through what I like to say everybody goes through. She's navigating family relationships and obligations. She's navigating friendship dynamics at work. And then she has this big external situation that kind of knocks her off the path that she thought she was on. And then she has to find it within herself to, you know, be the author of her story and to rewrite it and move down a path where she finds empowerment. And I think we all want that. We will all want a sense of control to the extent that we can have control in our lives and feel empowered. And so she goes through, I feel like, that journey of, you know, mistrusting magic and then being pulled into magic and then, you know, trying to figure out how to save her father. So I feel as if she really, really grows up through navigating all the different circumstances that are thrown at her.
Besides being an engaging read, what do you hope that readers will continue to think about after they finished your book?
Oh, great question. I hope they, if they're new to Anansi stories, if they're new to Ghanaian culture, I hope it sparked a sense of curiosity and interest that they may want to find more Anansi stories or more African folklore and mythology. And perhaps, you know, it's an icebreaker should they ever meet someone who's from Ghana, who's been to Ghana and said, oh, hey, I read this thing in Goldenborn. Is, you know, I know how to prepare this particular food or I know about this ceremony. I think it could be, I would love for it to be a means to connection with other people, but also for people to see the book as a universal story, one that a character evolves from beginning to end in the way that we all evolve as life throws different circumstances at us.
Is this a book you consider just to be a one-off, or is the chance you might want to revisit this character in future books?
I'm actually currently working on the sequel. So there is a book 2 in the works. Don't know about publication date yet, but it is coming.
There's a question I like to ask authors of fiction, and it's this. If you could spend a day in real life with one of the characters from your novel, who would it be and why?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think I would spend the day with Anansi. Anansi, you know, as the god of stories, probably, you know, has a lot of stories to tell. I would love to hear, you know, the tales he would spin to get a better sense of that dual nature that he has, you know, like he's morally gray, and just to, you know, get a better understanding of him as a character.
This young adult fantasy novel is Goldenborn by Amma Ofosia-Lieb. Amma, thank you for talking with me today.
Oh my gosh, it's been my pleasure, Dan. Thank you so much for having me.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.